You've got to Google these things. They are probably the cutest things ever. Miniature cows.
Is that how they make sliders?
Oh, sad. Oh, no.
Have a sex toy. We'll try it. Have a fetish. We'll try it. We masturbate and copulate to recreate and educate. We are the Trisexual.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Trisexuals Podcast. I am Max Chameleon.
Beep boop. Banana. And I'm Lily Chameleon.
All right, so we got some fun stuff to get into today. The first thing I'd like to talk about is where Lily and I just came back from this weekend. So this is the weekend before this podcast is released. You guys get this on
Wednesday-ish.
So this is this past weekend. We actually were scoping out a location for
where we want to see you naked.
Well, that's actually kind of true. So we were thinking about hosting a Trisexuals retreat. Now, what this would be is just a simple, fun thing held up in the Rocky Mountains where, you know, like-minded folks could come and join us and just kind of chill out, enjoy some, you know, discussion, hanging out in a hot tub and, you know.
Yeah, and we were actually, you know, discussing this with some of our sexplorers that are on Telegram. And a couple of them talked about how, you know, they would be willing to offer their services of being masseuses.
Well, yeah, that's, of course, Scraps, the official masseuse of Trisexuals. Mm-hmm. He also has a deal going on for Trisexuals listeners if you're in Colorado. We'll link that in the show notes if you want to get an amazing massage.
Oh, my God. I need him to come back again.
Yeah, his company's Argente Therapy, I think it's pronounced.
I believe that's the right way. And I'm sorry, Kobold, if we're totally messing that up, we'll fix that next time.
So he's offered to do massage. And of course, Kit of the Trisexuals offered to do yoga. So when this might be going down is actually about a year from now. So we're going to look to do it, in October of 2019. Mm-hmm. Reason for that is the place that we want to go is actually Winter Park, Colorado, and it's the off season on October before ski season starts and after their summer season, which they do fun stuff up there. So it's incredibly low rates and the hotel's like empty and it's super relaxed, amazing, in the mountains.
The staff is so sweet and kind.
They're really awesome there. So if you are interested in this, let us know. We'll be talking about it more over the course of the year and see who's interested in going. You can, you know, fly into Denver and then, you know, rent a car or whatever to drive up there. It's only about an hour and a half, I think, out of Denver.
Yeah, from DIA, I think it's about hour
another
and a half.
Option is the train goes there. It stops right in Winter Park. So lots of options for going there. And
you know, also, they're pet friendly. So if you're worried about, you know, your fuzzy, you know, fur baby being left home.
Fuzzy fur baby.
Yeah, you don't want to leave them home. Like, we brought our cat Marbles with us this weekend. Yeah, that was amazing.
Cats and dogs. And, you know, we'll probably have Marbles with us next year. Mm-hmm. And it's just really great. You just chill out and have fun. So, you know, that's one of the things we're planning. Also, I'd like to apologize that there's not a What's Playing section again this week. We've been so busy with work and checking out this retreat and all that sort of stuff. We haven't actually used sex toys in about a month, which is pretty embarrassing.
That reminded me, I had dreams about using sex toys all last night.
What sex toys were you using in your dreams?
So in my dreams, I was using, with other people, the Dommy, the vibrator, as well as, I want to say it was some sort of tentacle alien dildo.
All right. Well, that sounds. How are you using the Dommy with other people?
So I was using it on myself, and then there was a female-bodied individual that I was playing with and putting it on her clit, and then it switched to, I think you were fucking her, fucking me.
You had a dream about me fucking someone else?
Of course. It's so sexy and hot. Oh, I need to go to the other room now. Oh.
While Lily goes and has a little moment to herself, let's go to a word from our sponsor.
Hey, Sexplorers.
I'm really excited to talk to you today about a truly exceptional sex toy shop, Vibrant. Located at bevibrant.com, Vibrant has a commitment to inclusivity with a sex-positive and education-forward approach. As the trisexuals, we love to recommend Vibrant. We can be sure that each and every toy that they carry is of high quality and is 100% body safe. You simply can't go wrong. Vibrant is also backed by Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. How cool is that? As fans of the show, you'll receive 20% off your order at bevibrant.com when using the code TRISEXUALS at checkout. That's TRYSEXUALS. That's bevibrant.com and use the code TRISEXUALS at checkout to get 20% off your body safe toys. Thank you to Vibrant for supporting the trisexuals and making the sex-positive world a better place. All right, welcome back. So now it is time to get into the meat and potatoes of this episode. I think we use that term a lot, perhaps too much. You're thinking about my meat and potatoes.
I can't help it.
So today we're talking to Dr. Jenny Schuyler from the Intimacy Institute about all sorts of fun things. So let's go to that.
Explorers. So we are here today speaking with Dr. Jenny Schuyler, who is a sex and relationship therapist. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
We're very happy
to have you today.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. Oh, that's great. So we always start the podcast out with a quick little question. What is your favorite dessert?
Well, this is one of my favorite questions, so I'm glad you're asking me this. And if I were stuck on a desert island, it would be the same answer. Which would be a Dairy Queen Blizzard. It would be the chocolate ice cream from Dairy Queen mixed in with half cookie dough and half Oreo, as large as you can make it.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I didn't even know such a thing existed.
No.
Oh, you got to go to Dairy Queen. It's pretty great.
I love ice cream. It doesn't like me very much, but still doesn't stop me from doing it. And I've heard a lot of people that are into ice cream might have similar issues, but you know, you just got to plan out the ice cream stops. And I would probably
switch out the Oreo with the peanut butter cup one, and then I'd be all set.
There you go.
That sounds good too.
So,
but I like the Oreo.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Wow. Well, where do you want me to start? Professionally, I imagine is the question.
Yeah, sure. Let's go professional.
A little about myself. Well, presently, I'm a sex and relationship therapist in Boulder, Colorado, and I run the Intimacy Institute with my husband, who is also a sex therapist. And we have two other associates that actually work with us, and we see mostly couples and individuals, but sometimes we'll do talks out in the community. We do lots of workshops and couples retreats. And my husband and I have two young kids, which makes life very busy, juggling everything for sure. And I love what I do, though. I mean, I feel really blessed. I really don't feel like I go to work. I mean, I go to work, but I love being, I'm an extrovert, I'm an external processor. So being with people really actually juices me up and gives me energy. And then knowing I'm helping them with one of the key foundations of their life in terms of their sexual pleasure gives me enormous joy. So my work is wonderful. I mean, I get to help people have better sex lives or understand their sexuality in a deeper, more meaningful way, which is, I think, the best job on earth. So I feel very blessed by that.
Oh, and yeah, that sounds excellent. That's like the dream.
Yeah, it really is. Doing something you love every day, that sounds amazing.
It's important. You know, and I ask my couples, like, what do you do for work? If they have work satisfaction, it helps the rest of the process go well because it's what you do for so many hours of your day. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to love what you do if you can. You know, it's also a privilege and a blessing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're slowly trying to get there. Unfortunately, Lily and I still have vanilla day jobs that have absolutely nothing to do with sex. So we have to spend at least 8 hours a day. Well, you know, hiding the fact that we're thinking about sex. Not like we stop thinking about sex. We just have to hide it during the day.
Exactly. Like in my day job, I work in the banking institution. So I have to be very conservative in my thinking. Mm.
So I have an interesting question for you. You said that you and your husband are both sex therapists, right?
Yep.
And you have children. Have you, like, I don't know what their ages are, but have you, like, broached the subject with them about what you and your husband do? I'm curious, like, how you handle that.
Oh, I definitely. So I have a 4-year-old, 4.5, I should say, and a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the 2-year-old quite gets that I'm a therapist. Mm-hmm. The 4-year-old definitely knows. And since I've been working with Adam and Eve, I have to make these little videos called Savvy Sex in 60 Seconds. And they're weekly. And I put them on my phone. Like, I just basically use a tripod and my phone and make the videos. My son loves to take my phone and take pictures. He's actually quite good. But then he looks at the pictures, right. And so he sees mommy's videos. And so he goes, oh, I want to see 60 seconds. And sometimes it's appropriate for him to see it. Right, right. Sometimes not. But, you know, if it's appropriate enough, I'll let him see it. And he sometimes usually just gets bored. He's
excited to see mommy, like, you know, on a video, right? Like, that just seems really cool to him.
Yeah. I mean, he knows what I do. I don't think he specifically knows that I'm a sex therapist. But both my kids all know all their body parts. They know their penis. They know their testicles. They know their anus. They know their parts. I mean, they obviously know their ears and their eyes and their elbows.
Absolutely.
But they know everything as, you know, I educated them really early when I was just changing their diapers. So that was a very normal conversation. But then, you know, Adam and Eve would send me different packages of different products they had. Right. And my kids would be like, what do you got, mommy? You got toys. And I'm like, I do have toys.
Yeah, mommy only toys.
They're not
toys.
Quite for you. Sometimes they get, you know, sometimes I can kind of make it into a kid toy. Like there's a dildo, for instance, you know, and they know what a penis is. So they're like, oh, you got a penis. I'm like, yes, I got a penis. So I'm just really matter of fact with them about it. You know, I keep the toys somewhere separate from them.
Sure.
Now I have a whole collection now because they sent me. And which, by the way, would be a miss if I didn't say that all your listeners can also get toys for, I think, 50% off anything if they listen to this and use TrySex. TrySex.
Oh, sweet.
Plus free shipping. So
sweet.
If you like toys and products, have a great time and
we'll
maybe not share
it
with your 4-year-old. Okay. So, yeah, I think they know. Basically, you know, my son definitely knows I go and I help people. I don't know if he knows quite what that means as a therapist, but he knows I go to the office and I help people. Mm-hmm. And I think he knows I do something with, like, body parts. But, like, I think that's the basic download of what he understands.
Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting about this is, like, to me it's kind of clear that, like, we aren't naturally born with the sexual shame that a lot of us as adults seem to experience, right? Like, you've explained this to them from, you know, an early age and, you know, it's not something that they feel embarrassed about. At least it sounds like the way that you described it. And I don't know, I just think that's a very interesting thing.
It is a really good point because, you know, growing up, at least for us in upstate New York, back in the 80s, you didn't have that kind of conversation with your parents.
No.
You know, you always kept cover up. You didn't know, like, you knew what they were, but you didn't talk about it. So to hear you talk to your children about this is so refreshing.
Thanks. No, I appreciate that and agree. You know, I don't think that we're born with sexual shame. I think that's a sociocultural phenomenon based on, you know, the parents' upbringing and relationship with sexuality.
Yeah.
So I always talk to parents, you know, if that's been your template, practice with your friends. Like, how do you get comfortable as a parent so that you can convey that comfort and confidence to your kids? I'm not out there to change people's values. Mm-hmm. Whatever their values are is fine. You know, I can
Absolutely.
Give some advice on age-appropriate times to talk about different things. But as long as the parent is comfortable and confident, usually the conversations go well.
Yeah, I can see if someone's not comfortable or confident, if they're ashamed of it, that's going to convey that to the child. Because children are like little sponges. They'll just suck up everything.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Well, even aside from talking to your children, I think talking about sex more in general, like you said, with your friends and that sort of thing. You know, before we started this podcast and this blog, Lily and I were pretty sexually open with each other, but no one else at all, really, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did this as part of a way to kind of celebrate what we had discovered about sexuality, but also it's helped us a lot, too, because now, you know, we've learned in our lives what's kind of like more important to us, especially when it comes to like picking friends. And if we, you know, can't have that conversation with someone, you know, not obviously not like immediately right away. We don't go, how you doing? You know, we're Max and Lily and we are like crazy you know, sexual.
Well, so it depends on the situation. Well, it
depends on the situation. I was saying, like, in a grocery store or something like that, you don't do that. But certainly, like, you know, there's been relationships where people have been less comfortable with sex, and those have kind of faded away a little bit. And, you know, we've made new friendships that have really begun to shine and feel a lot more comfortable with ourselves now since we started this journey.
It's a nice way of kind of weeding out and weeding in your tribe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In a way.
Yeah, I like that term tribe. We're definitely building a tribe.
We really are. It's our own little
That's
community.
Important. It's important. I think all kind of groups of people feel real a sense of belonging in a tribe.
Absolutely. One of the things, I mean, this is maybe not even for the podcast, but the whole idea of a tribe, like I like the idea of people living in that sort of tribal mindset, especially when it comes to like raising children or something like that, because it allows people, I don't know, I think that that experience is really good for
you mean like a tribe raising a child, so it's not just one person or a mom and a dad or mom and mom or whatever.
It takes a village.
It does. It takes a village to raise a child sometimes.
Sure. And I, you know, by tribe I don't mean just in terms of raising kids, but sort of a more
absolutely.
Have you, I don't know how other podcasts you listen to, Joe Rogan had on Sebastian Younger, who wrote a book called Tribe. I believe it was called Tribe. But he talks about the concept of tribe and how, like, even after, like, Hurricane Katrina or natural disasters, people band together and really help each other. And it's, and they, and in that coming together, there's a sense of belonging, there's a sense of purpose and a sense of meaning. And then when things kind of, like the hurricane, for instance, when everyone sort of found their ground and things settled down and the dust settled, they went back to their own individual homes. They kind of missed coming together in the catastrophe because there was that tribal element that we actually don't really have in our society. And I'm a big believer of finding like-minded people of like-minded values, interests, hobbies to sort of feel that sense of belonging so that they're, you know, because we're, I feel like otherwise we're so spread out. And we live in these, you know, separate homes, you know, unless you live in a condo and you know all your neighbors, even then you probably don't feel a sense of tribe that way. And then we have the phones to add on, you know, more separation of like face-to-face tribal feeling. And
yeah, with the phones now, even people that are in the same house aren't actually communicating with each other anymore.
Totally. Totally. Exactly.
And I see that, you know, the whole thing with the phones is interesting because I ride the train every day to work. The light rail. And some days I'll just put in an audiobook and I'll just look around at people and every single person is on their phone and no one's talking. It is the weirdest thing.
Yeah. When maybe, you know, 30 years ago, people met on the bus and had a romantic relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Of course, they weren't like us and met on MySpace.
Oh, man, yeah. We did meet on MySpace.
Oh,
that's amazing.
A lot of our listeners probably won't even know what MySpace is, but...
I'm old enough to know. Remember.
MySpace pre-Facebook.
Yep. Well, Facebook was around then, but I think it was just for, like,
schools.
Colleges and stuff.
That's right. 13 years ago, that would be the case.
Yeah. So we saw that you participate a lot in ASECT. Firstly, I always get the acronym wrong. Do you remember what it stands for?
Yeah, the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists.
Okay, for some reason I can't ever remember that. It's a long one.
It's a mouthful.
So tell us a little bit about that.
It's a national organization. Basically, it's a national organization to accredit sex educators, counselors, and therapists. So, for instance, in the state of Colorado, it's kind of an unregulated state, which is actually kind of, in my opinion, dangerous and unfortunate because anybody can hang their shingle as a sex therapist without any training, without any license, without any certification. So ASECT is one of the really important certifying bodies that ensures that therapists and counselors and educators, but I'm a therapist, so I'll speak from that lens, go through all the particular training that you need in terms of education, all the clinical hours in terms of doing the therapeutic work with clients, all the supervision so that there's another set of eyes clinically on you so that you're actually providing good therapy. sex therapy to your clients. Obviously, doing no harm is one of the key things as a therapist, but you want to do a little better than just do no harm. Hopefully, you're providing some real support and help and healing for clients. And so ASECT has a lot of great parameters and a board of ethics, and it's basically the container that holds therapists accountable to being the best therapist they can. And so the majority of therapists in ASECT are actually not yet certified. They're still training and learning and, you know, gaining all their experience and knowledge. And then there's a population that is certified, and then some are also supervisors. And so, you know, it's just trying to hold, in my opinion, the field of sex therapy with well regard, and hold it as a really important professional field that is not taken for granted and not misunderstood.
So you mentioned that Colorado has apparently no real regulations around it. So other states, I assume, do then. Like, what does that look like?
I don't know all the other state laws. I do know that, you know, so I got my graduate degree and trained in Florida. And so to be a sex therapist in Florida, you definitely need, you know, Florida has a lot of, I should say, more strict parameters for being certified and licensed as a sex therapist. No one, you can't hang your shingle as, you know, somebody fresh out of even your bachelor's and certainly your master's as a sex therapist in Florida. You have to go through the training and take certain tests with the state and all of that. I think California is similar, but I'm not entirely sure about that. So every state has a different way of holding the license and the profession accountable to either the state or the national body. National accrediting body.
Yeah, and especially with, you know, sex is what I see like one of the major things that, you know, makes human being, you know, being human almost. Like, sex is such an important part of our physical and mental health, and the fact that it's seems almost like an afterthought in some cases, you know, is sad.
Well, I know, I don't know if it's an afterthought. The way I present it to my couples is that if the emotional relationship of the couple is really solid and there's a lot of transparency and trust and intimacy, then sex typically works. And so it doesn't really become this big thorn in the middle of the relationship. But if sex becomes one of these things that they disagree about, or the desire discrepancy, like the different libidos, and libido is not really actually a clinical word, but for listeners, let's just use it. But, you know, if the libidos are radically different and the couple tends to fight over that, then it can crumble the integrity of the emotional relationship, and then everything gets magnified. The sexual relationship gets magnified because it's just not working. So if sex is working, I don't want to say it's an afterthought, but it can kind of feel that way because, you know, it's working. Kind of like, I had lunch today. I actually don't remember what I had for lunch today because I ate lunch. It was not a big deal. It's kind of an afterthought because there's not a lot of like tension around it. But if I had an eating disorder, and then I would definitely know what I had for lunch or what I didn't have for lunch because there's a lot of tension around it. So if there's not a lot of tension around the sexual relationship, yeah, it's kind of an afterthought. So I actually think it's kind of healthy that it's an afterthought for some couples, because then
focus
it's not
on, you know, what you actually need to focus on. If it's not, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
So yeah.
That makes sense. I'm curious a little bit on the different libidos, as you called it. Like, is there a general approach that you take in that? Because that's a tough one. That's something that Lily and I have in the past struggled with. I'm just curious to hear from an actual, you know, therapist, like how you might approach that.
That's a big question. But there's a few components. One, I like to start with basic education around how our libidos work. You know, and if it's a heterosexual couple, for instance, and this is not to say that gender isn't fluid and there's, you know, other ways to express or experience our gender. But if we just look at the biology for a moment of our humanness here, we tend to be born with a certain amount of hormonal makeup, meaning our hormones, you know, manifest and circulate through our system in different ways. So typically, and not always, right? There's lots of different sociocultural factors that go into our sex drive. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But typically, men circulate with a lot more testosterone in their system, mm-hmm. and women don't. And so all that means is that men tend to have their arousal more accessible to them. The way that I like to make the analogy is like a fireplace. If you have a gas fireplace, you just hit the on button and the fire is kind of there. It's more accessible to them because the testosterone is like, yeah, I'm going to remind you at multiple points in the day that you're horny. Here yes. you are. And for women, especially if you layer in stress or tiredness or busyness or other factors,
yep.
the lack of accessibility to your sex, you know, I should say the testosterone allows for the accessibility. So without that lack of, you know, with the lack of accessibility, it's just harder work. Meaning, you know, there's a lot more that goes into the complexity of our brain to kind of turn it on. So the fireplace analogy we come back to for women, again, is the wood fireplace. Mm-hmm. You want to go collect the wood. you want to put it in the wood fireplace just so. You got to add the kindling. You got to light it. Then you got to stoke it.
Exactly.
You got to blow on it. You got to do the flute. The whole nine yards, right? So, if that's a metaphor that kind of helps a lot of couples understand how they just work from that kind of mm-hmm. hormonal level, I should say.
I was going to say, that's a really interesting analogy, and I love that analogy because it really works so well with the fireplace because, mm-hmm. you know, in my experience, guys, it's like they can turn it on in a dime, but if I'm having one of those days where I have so many things going on that I just had a conversation with a loan officer or something else, I can't turn it on as quickly.
Yeah.
So go collect it's that not wood as accessible. And the wood's wet. So you gotta dry the wood first, and then, you know, you got no kindling laying around, you know. And I'm just like a combustible pile of, like, you know, straw and gas just together.
You're just a kindling. There you are. Boom.
Yeah, like the smallest little thing that, you know, creates a spark. Boom. It's all gone.
Yes. So, which is just on that level, right? You mm-hmm. seem to have this aha of like, oh, it's a good metaphor. When couples understand how they work and almost more importantly, how the other person works, there's a lot more empathy and compassion. Oh, sweetheart, you know what? You take a lot more time because the wood needs to dry out and, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, you're not as close to your arousal because it just doesn't, you know, doesn't circulate you through your system because you weren't born with a lot of testosterone. That's just the biology of, you know, the luck of the draw, you should say. And so just working with that, you know, having an understanding of that is really helpful. So I start there.
Yeah, and then maybe, you know, the couple start thinking of compromise and stuff. And, you know, then maybe you realize that it's fun collecting wood and working on that together. You can collect wood together.
Or in our case, you learn that if I don't have sex every day, I become a crazy psycho, for lack of a better term, bitch.
I'm not saying anything. I'm staying out of this one.
So Lily, you manage to have sex every single day?
Every day, at least once.
Wow. So is that, when you say sex every day, is that with yourself? Is that with Max? Is that an orgasm? Is that just pleasure?
It's intercourse every day with him.
Okay.
With me, yeah.
Yeah.
And we hit 99% of the days. Every once in a while, there's a day we miss. And lately, we missed a bunch of days because
my family was in town.
But yeah, we try to make time for every day, which is a large amount. That's above average for sure. And, you know, the way that it doesn't become just like a chore, because it could if you're like, oh, we got to hit it today. We always try to do something a little bit different. Some days it is just a chore and we're okay with that.
Sometimes.
You know, like Lily told me before bed, she's like, oh, I need this before we go. And then I'll be like, all right. And we kind of take care of it. But then we make a point to, like, you know, tomorrow night, let's take, you know, couple hours and do this and get stuff prepared for it. So I don't know, we always look forward to it.
It is, and I think part of it is, you know, with the review blog and everything, with getting these toys, being able to you know, be like, okay, gotta experiment time.
Well, yeah, that is actually the hard part for people that review sex toys, and we've stopped accepting review products for a while now, because we're just absolutely buried in sex toys. But we'd be having sex, even though we were having sex so frequently, sometimes more than once a day, you know, every once in a while I was going to be like, okay, now it's time to do some, like, homework. We got to, like, go grab it, you know, this particular toy, even though we're, like, looking at this one. So that's an interesting dynamic.
So that's a great question, though. I mean, your listeners would probably benefit from hearing what motivates you. Like, if you just had the loan officer, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and it was sort of this, I don't know, tense interaction or something, how do you switch gears to go, I know this is going to be pleasurable and fun and exciting and orgasmic and healthy?
And it's not always been that way. This is something we've discovered, you know, being together for 13 years, because there was actually a time where we were having, I mean, how little we were having sex.
Oh, once every couple weeks.
Yeah, something like that, which for me was like a shockingly low amount. So
I think for me, it's just, you know, and therapy has helped me more so understand my own, like, biology, my own chemistry, what goes on through my head, and just being able to know, even though I'm frustrated, sometimes sex, actually all the time, sex helps clear my brain. I can actually think like a human being afterwards.
Do you remember, like, how you came to that realization? Because
I don't know. I think it was just one of those light bulb aha moments that was like, wait a minute. I have this feeling. I'm having the same frustrated feeling. Why not just turn that into sex? I'm not sure exactly when that happened, but it was like an aha moment.
That energy.
Well, that's actually the function of arousal, right? Once you get aroused, it washes away everything else. That's that's the point of arousal.
Getting over that initial.
It's getting over the hump to go, I know I can get aroused enough to get to that point. That's the trickiest piece, I think, for couples.
Getting over the because hump once to get to the humps.
Yeah, exactly. Well put. Yeah.
And
which, again, that comes to back to the brain of, like, you have a great, it sounds like you have a great relationship with your sexuality and with Max. I mean, it's really clear. And so, you know, even if you had a bad experience with the loan officer, you're like, you know what? I know that arousal will wash it all away. Mm-hmm. And I know sex will feel good. And, like, that's my solution. And a lot, I would say a lot of people, it takes a lot of work to get them to that idea, to that concept.
It really, you know, looking back on it, you're right. It does take a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. And I remember years ago, there were times where I would be in mid-coitus and I'd have that little nagging feeling in the back of my head. And it would just kill my arousal right there. Because I'd immediately think about all the million things I need to do. And learning to be just present, you know, and taking those little nagging thoughts and putting them away for while you're what you're doing.
Yeah. And that's beautiful, Lily. I mean, I fully agree with you. Even when that's the biggest piece is that, you know, in Boulder, we call it mindfulness, but I think the rest of the country would call it being present. It does take work to stay with your arousal because it can be elusive. Mm-hmm. You go to your laundry list or what something else, and out it goes. And then you can easily get it back. But if you sort of stay very present with it, you can ride that wave really nicely.
Mm-hmm. That used to be a huge problem with me when we had started swinging.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, I'm a pretty anxious person in general. But I, you know, at one point I had a situation where I wasn't able to maintain an erection while we were playing. And then from that point on, like, that kept coming into my mind. And then I was pretty much, like, unable to stay erect while at play parties for, like, the longest time. I can't remember how we got out of that.
I do actually remember how we got out of it. It was a lot of practice, and it would take, like, we would set up things like, okay, if you're starting to get soft, you would give me a look, and I would just come over and help you. Kind of like the fluffer.
More than just my fluffer.
I know, but, you know, I'm just trying to help. And, you know, and just, like, seeing it, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't going to get
angry.
Yeah,
but that was rough for a while because it's such, you know, performance anxiety. It just it gets in your head and, you know, it's a feedback loop. It just kept feeding itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. most of our men come in with just that exact same thing. But sounds like when you quote unquote fluffed him or came to his rescue, it was reminding his brain that it's not a performance, it's pleasure. Mm-hmm. But in a swinging situation, especially with new people or a group of people in the room, it can feel like a performance.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the second that performance element takes over your body, so does the anxiety.
It's very hard because, like,
bye-bye.
Yeah, exactly. And like in swinging, like when we first started, it was hard to get out of that mindset of like it's some sort of competition. Like, okay, what guy can last longer? What guy like is bigger and, you know, stays hardest the longest? Like all this stuff. Like, I don't know if that's like a particular, like, you know, male gender thing or if that's just
I
was brought up or whatever. But
I think each gender has their own, like, you know, thoughtfulness and thinking about that kind of stuff. And even in our generation, I think it's a big thing with societal pressures and how we grew up and everything. Because I know as a female, when we'd go to these swinging events or kink events, I'd always be looking at like, oh, that girl's way prettier, way skinnier than me, you know, and it would kill my arousal, you know.
Well, yes. I remember one of the things that you were worried about going along with that whole thing that people push on genders fairly or not. I think unfairly, but you, if I recall correctly, struggled with feeling like you were being too sexually promiscuous. Like, what would people think about the fact that you're playing with these other people outside of your relationship and that sort of
thing? There was that, playing with the males, and then because I am bisexual, my term is I'm pansexual because I'll play with everybody, but just coming to grips that I was bisexual was when about... right around when we started swinging, really, that I came to the understanding I am bisexual. I like females. Mm-hmm. I like the female form. And having that conversation with my partner, being like, I like guys, but I also like girls. And just, you know.
You like people, honey.
I do like people in general. But, you know, just having that conversation. So it's like, I know a lot of people probably think, you know, figure this out when they're younger, and I only found out about it in my 20s, you know, my late 20s, early 30s.
I think some people figure this out in their 40s, 50s, and I mean, I don't think you're late to the game to figure that out, especially if you grew up with a conservative culture. You know, your brain is, you know, basically, if you think about hiking a mountain, the path that's right there in front of you, that's the path you know to follow. And if you haven't bushwhacked another path, you don't know that it goes to a really cool view on the other side of the mountain because you never took that path. But once you sort of serendipitously or accidentally go on it, you're like, oh, how cool is that path? And then it just takes a little, like, you know, massaging of the path to make it an option for you. I think all of us actually are more fluid in our sexuality if we allow ourselves to be. And it's the cultural messages that are a little more repressive that kind of keep us on the paths that we're used to.
I agree. And I think, though, that at least in the last 10 years, I've seen a change from, you know, therapists being like, okay, being monogamous is the way to be, to now being open to polyamory, swinging. It seems like there's been a shift in our therapists and counselors. Did you see that as well?
I definitely see that. I mean, I also live in Boulder, so I feel like I live in one of the most progressive cities possible. But I definitely see that shift. And I think that's also following the lead of what, you know, people are doing, you know, in the younger generations. And so I think the therapists are following the lead of our population, basically. You know, if more people are coming to us that are opening their relationships, whether it for be more recreational swinging or more relationship style polyamory, you know, we have to keep pace and support people on a path that feels, again, meaningful to them, beneficial to them, grows them in the direction they want to grow. And you know what? It could be a big catastrophic mistake, or it could be, you know, the gold pot at the end of the rainbow. But our job is to take them on that journey, right?
Mistakes are learning experiences. You know, they don't necessarily have to be all negative. So, you know, I've heard that in polyculture, one of the things they use is, I forget what the term is exactly, but like another learning experience or something like that, when there's been a relationship that they had that didn't work out quite the way that the people in the relationship were expecting, then they just, instead of calling it like a failure or a breakup, just say, oh, that was, you know, a learning experience.
Yeah. I think that for monogamy or polyamory, I think every relationship is a learning experience for sure. You learn about yourself and you learn about how you are in relationship to another.
So I have kind of an interesting question. I don't know if you'd be able to help us with this, but when Lily was was looking for a therapist, she was concerned, even though it wasn't specific for sex stuff, she was concerned that she was going to end up with a therapist that would misunderstand, you know, the open...
it's open. Basically our dynamic. And so I was afraid that someone would... You know, I'd come
like,
to them.
See that, and then like, okay, that's the thing that we need to like work on and fix, and like, really, that's not.
That would keep your sexuality as this big elephant in the room that they wouldn't know how to navigate or name.
Exactly.
Which Lily, you're 100% correct to have that fear, because it's a really valid one. I see so many couples, even if they're just navigating like generic vanilla heterosexual junk on them. Nothing's junk, but just, you know, the desire discrepancy, right? Mm-hmm. Even outside of what you've named as like, you know, you have a more unique sexual profile than maybe the majority culture. But even if I just see whatever profile I see, I get a lot of couples or clients that say, yeah, the previous therapist didn't even know how to support my sexuality. They didn't ask any questions about it. They didn't ask about my relationship or my relationship for, you know, foundation or formation. They didn't ask anything or orientation or gender, none of it, right? And so then your whole sexuality is like this big elephant in the room, when that's a big part of who you are as a human being, a big part of who you are in terms of your, probably your goals, in terms of where you want to get to in therapy, even if that's not a particular struggle, it's a part of who you are. And so just to push it under the rug is a disservice to you as a human. So I think it's a really valid fear that you had, and it's great that you did choose somebody that knows how to handle sexuality, because otherwise, you know, that's a big part of you that goes missing in the room. And I can say that most grad schools do not train therapists in sexuality. It's usually an elective. So if they elect to take it, wonderful. But then it's just one course. It's one elective. And then there's nothing else. And so, you know, there's a lot of lack of training. And then we don't really live in a society that knows how to talk about sex so openly and comfortably and confidently, like we talked about before. And so it becomes this big, difficult elephant in the room. Absolutely.
So is there a way to, I mean, I know what you ended up doing is like you were very forward with, you know, when you were meeting your therapist for the first time.
I saw this one gentleman, was with him for a year and a half, and then he went on to something else and transferred to me to the new therapist, which I told you about. And that's one way I was just very upfront and forward with both meetings, saying, this is who I am. This is what's so big in my life. And kind of just putting it out there. Now, a lot of people are not as forward as me, and I can understand that. And it's scary and it's terrifying. So is there a better way? Is there like a website that lists all the professionals maybe in your area that are open to talking about this kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, well, ASECT is one. So we talked about ASECT earlier, and all the certified sex therapists are listed by city, by state, and then by city. So you can find an ASEC certified sex therapist, and typically they will be well seasoned to support you in all of those conversations of sexuality. You guys mentioned being poly. There is poly friendly professionals, and they have their own website. They have their own website, and if you look for a therapist, typically, like on my website, I think I have a little link that says poly friendly professionals at the bottom somewhere. I should have that. So some professionals will intentionally put that on there to key into their client population that, you know, please bring this if that's part of your profile. Other things, I mean, I would say if you go on Psychology Today, which is where a lot of people look for their therapist, look for look for different people's qualifications and their trainings. If it says, and you got to be careful, right? Anybody can hang their shingle as a sex therapist. And then some people do different kinds of sexological work that's not quite sex therapy. Some people do, for instance, sex addiction, and some people do sexological body work. So there's a lot of different like components of sexology and sexual work. So if you're looking for a therapist, it's important to look for, you know, the qualifications of the sex therapist in terms of, you know, are they going to be well-trained enough to support you and what you're trying to do and accomplish?
And I think it's important for our listeners to know that if you go to a therapist and you don't mesh well, it's okay to find someone else.
Totally. And we have a team of four people at the Intimacy Institute. And I always say to new clients, like, I have a conversation on the phone about 10, 15 minutes. I get a feel of what they're looking to try to solve or explore. And then I get a feel of the personality. And I'm like, you know what? I think you'd be really good with so-and-so on my team or so-and-so on my team. And our personalities are very different. And our styles are really different. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, if I got it wrong for whatever reason, call me back, email me. Or if I am the person that's not right for you, let's talk about that really openly. And I'll say that to people in the first session. Like, it's like finding the right pair of shoes. If it doesn't fit, like, mm-hmm. I am never, never offended. I want to basically, A, find you the best help you can have. And sometimes I'll refer out to somebody else in town if it feels like, you know what, my colleague in Denver, way better than somebody on my team for this particular person on the phone. Mm-hmm. So I'm really adamant about getting the right person to the, you know, and if it's not the right fit, change. Mm-hmm. I always say change because that's, you know, so important to the healing process. Ideally, I fire myself, right? I get a client to the place where they're like, I don't need you. I'm awesome. I'm in great shape. Thank you for all your help. You're fired, kind of thing. You know, happily fired, I should say.
You're working to get yourself out of a job. That's kind of what you're doing.
Totally. If you're not working to get yourself out of a job, you're not really doing your job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Sexplorers, there you go. If you are having any sort of, you know, like doubts about reaching out to a therapist, like you just mm-hmm. give it a shot. Mm-hmm. Go to some of these resources that were mentioned and check it out. You know, mm-hmm. don't let it, you know, what you have personally going on, if you're poly or swinging, like don't let that hold you back.
Exactly. And I can say from experience that when I went to start a therapy a year and a half ago, I probably hemmed and hawed for a good 3 months.
You were worried about it.
Mm. Worried about, should I? Do I really need this? Do I really need to talk? You know, and just trying to figure out, yes, I need the help, you know, and just mm-hmm. accepting that. And, you know, for our listeners out there, it's okay to hem and haw. And someday you'll get to that point where, like, I can do this. And that I'm so excited for those people that can say, I need this help.
Yeah. Lily, I love that you're so forward and open about that, too, mm-hmm. because and I'll admit for myself, I mean, I've been in therapy my whole life. But as a therapist, I definitely have a therapist I go to because I can't sit, you know, in my chair and not experience the other side of the couch. I can't do mental health without making sure my mental health is in pretty good shape as well. And it's such an interesting stigma because we go to the doctor for our physical health. And mm-hmm. you know, I'm not a terribly religious person, but people who are religious go to places for their spiritual health, for instance. But we seem to have the stigma when it comes to mental health, and that's a strange and, again, unfortunate cultural bias, I think.
I think it's starting to change. I hope it's starting to change. It seems that way. Yeah. I think that, you know, I hear a lot more about people that talk about going to therapy now openly, and it's not such a negative thing, mm-hmm. you know.
You know, it's different than when we were kids and, oh, you're going to the shrink and you would be basically shunned thinking that you were a crazy kid or something.
Yeah.
And nowadays, it's just normal. Because we all need to be able to talk to someone. And sometimes just hearing yourself say the words helps you understand what you're going through anyway.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like, when you go to a therapist, at least in my experience when I've gone, you're still the person, like, in control. Like, you're the one that mm-hmm. actually is completing the work. And, you know, the therapist is like, you know, almost a coach or something that helps you identify, you know, maybe things that are in your blind spot and just
your spirit guide.
Mm-hmm. Your spirit guide. I don't know about all that, but yeah. And so, you know, Lily's, you know, had a lot of, I think, positive improvements mm-hmm. in her life, and that's been all work that she's done. But, you know, it would have been a lot harder without the help that you had.
Oh, yes.
Mm. That's great to hear. Mm-hmm. That's so great to hear. Yeah. Really.
And learning.
And courageous.
Oh, thank you. And learning boundaries. Boundaries are a big thing.
Yes.
Especially when my family visits.
Yeah. All right. So I've got an out there question. What are the name of your chickens?
Wait, chickens?
Chickens. That's great.
You have chickens, right?
Yeah, I have backyard chickens.
What?
I do. I have four. There's three who, they all look the same. They're the brown chicken. They're kind of a red brown chicken. And then there's one that's a black and white spotted chicken.
Oh, cool.
So the three red, I can't really tell the difference between them. I'll be really honest. So I just call them the weather girls. Because they're ladies. They're ladies, right?
Yeah.
And so I call them the weather girls. And then I call the black and white Carol King. And what's even cuter is when I open the chicken coop every morning with my kids, they're like, Carol King! Hello, weather girls! Hello, Carol King!
That's awesome.
It's really sweet.
So, I had a question for you. I was looking at your website earlier, and I saw there's a couples retreat. What's that about?
Yeah, we have a couples retreat. It's in Aspen, Colorado. Basically, actually, so my husband and I are writing a book on the protocol we take couples through in terms of, we're calling it Roadmap to Intimacy. And it's a protocol that we've used with couples for years. We just have not, obviously, I just mentioned I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. So time,
yes.
not as accessible to us. So we're finally just trying to put our protocol on paper in terms of the book. So that's a work in progress coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming along nicely. It's just not quite published yet. So the couples retreat this particular year, is a journey along that same roadmap to intimacy, which is taking couples on emotional intimacy. Like there's communication exercises for emotional intimacy. And then there's building some tools and skills around physical intimacy, sensual intimacy, and sexual intimacy. Because what happens oftentimes, you know, if we come back to this accessibility to arousal concept that we talked about earlier, if we don't have arousal as accessible to us, what are the things we can do in our toolbox to build that?
Mm-hmm.
And so having a whole toolbox of ideas and ways to connect, especially if some of the tools don't work, okay, we have a whole set of other tools so that we're actually connecting physically and then sensually. A lot of couples miss out on actually doing sensual connection. They kind of try to bypass that.
Mm-hmm.
And try to just do like this erotic connection, right. And they're not quite aroused enough. There's not enough arousal building to get there. And then it kind of falls flat, or it feels routine, or it feels performance oriented. So the whole book and the whole retreat, the whole couples retreat, takes couples on that journey so that they can experience that with us. And that's PG in terms of the time with us is PG. We're not going to, you know. We send them home with not PG homework, but more importantly, hopefully they have this toolbox of things that they can really do at home and keep fine tuning.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like fun.
It does sound like fun. It sounds like a lot of fun.
And the beauty of a retreat, the reason I love doing retreats too is you're retreating. You kind of feel like you're on your honeymoon all over again. And so, yes, it's kind of a fabricated experience of like, it's not your daily life. You're away from work. You're away from kids. If you have any, you know, you're away from the daily grind of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So there is sort of that honeymoon effect, but there's no better way to kind of learn and download new cool skills, especially in something like sexuality and eroticism, unless you're on this honeymoon. So that's the beauty of also doing it as a retreat and really like investing in a beautiful location and kind of these mm-hmm. amenities and luxuries to kind of be like, I'm on my honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a honeymoon experience where I'm actually learning cool things to take away for the rest of my life.
So since we are the trisexuals, we love sex toys. Do you have a favorite sex toy you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of sex toys over my lifespan. I actually got into this field because I was in college in the Vagina Monologues, and at the time... At the time, I was allowed to write my own monologue. You know, you have to, obviously, you have to audition for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wrote it about female pleasure and my entire toy collection. And this was well before I worked for Adam and Eve, by the way. So it was meant to be. So I've had a lot of toys over the years, and I'm a big fan of them. But I would say the one toy that sort of stayed with me literally since adolescence until today is the Pocket Rocket. And it's just easy. It's small. It's portable. You can you can fly with it. TSA doesn't really notice or care, though I do like TSA to kind of notice and care because it's just a fun interaction when you do.
Yes.
Just to, you know, put that out there. But yeah, it's just a tried and true long-term, you know, I've had lots of probably, I would say I've had better toys through the years, but they ultimately die. This one doesn't ever seem to die. It's kind of like the Hitachi wand of the 70s. Yeah. It just never dies. But that's just too big for me.
Understandable. They're pretty big. We like the Dommy, which is like a smaller version of that. And that's also a teledildonic sex toy, which means that you can like control it remotely. And Lily and I have been able to make use of that over great distances and stuff before when I'm traveling, which is a lot of fun. You can plug it into video games, makes it a whole new experience. Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Jenny. Hey, that sounds weird. Just, oh God, you should do it, honey. I'm so bad at this. The pressure's on. I fail terribly.
There's no pressure.
It's podcast performance anxiety is what it is.
So, thank you.
You should keep this. This is actually beautiful. This, you know.
So thank you so much, Dr. Jenny Schuyler, for coming on and talking to us about all the different topics we covered today. How would our listeners get a hold of you, you know, about the retreat, about, you know, seeing what you do?
Well, thank you for having me. It was absolutely delightful. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And yeah, I'm in Boulder, Colorado. My website is theintimacyinstitute.org. So we have therapy for couples and individuals. And I think actually we are... We're now doing some telecoaching if you don't live in state and you don't have a therapist accessible to you. And we do have our couples retreat. It's in April 2019. So if you go to the website, you can learn more about that. And I do work with Adam and Eve, and they have lots of – they're a sex-positive company, and they have lots of products and toys that they will ship to you for free and give – any of these listeners now 50% off if you use TRISEX on the code when you go to their website. So whether you need toys, therapy, couples retreat, hopefully I've given you a list of resources.
Thank you so much. For some of us, toys are therapy.
They really are.
They're certainly fun.
Yes.
Well, Sexplorers, it is time now for the Define This segment. This is a section where we attempt to define ridiculous entries from Urban Dictionary. And today's word is grapefruiting, brought to us by Akron Timeless.
Grapefruiting.
I have a guest for this one.
Well, why don't we let...
So do I.
Ooh, well, why don't we let our guest make her guess?
I would guess that it's something to do with cunnilingus for oral sex for women.
Mm.
Grapefruiting is like, you know, you cut the grapefruit in half, you make a little slice in the middle, and then you have this sort of wet, luscious fruit to practice your oral sex on.
Oh, I like that.
My mouth is watering right now. It sounds absolutely delicious. I think that's a good guess. And I've seen a lot of pictures lately. I don't know if like this is related or not, but I've seen a lot of pictures where they've sliced the grapefruit in half and people are like putting their fingers in it. And
yeah,
it
I've
looks
seen that.
Like, you know, exactly like, you know,
a
female bodied individual putting fingers inside of herself. So it's a very erotic image. And I also like grapefruit, so it's not helpful. I'm like all over the place on that. So my guess on grapefruiting is whenever you cut into citrus or eat citrus, it tends to like, you know, there's droplets and squirts everywhere. You know, so I think that grapefruiting is like a sexual act. It could be cunnilingus or sex or whatever. But you have a person that's like close by to where the action is happening, and they're getting, you know, squirted and splashed all over. So it's like this whole grapefruiting citrus experience.
Interesting. It's out there. I like it. I'm going to go on the crazy side and say that grapefruiting is... when, as you know, for a male-bodied individual, they take the grapefruit and they're sticking their dick in it and using it like a masturbator.
Oh, like, you know, putting a hole in it and...
Yeah.
Getting, oh, okay. All right. I thought you were going to...
Would they just cut a hole or would you cut it in half?
You cut a hole, so it's basically like a masturbator. So you're basically just going up and down.
Like a sleeve.
By the way, I did try that with an apple once. Not recommended. That was... I was young. I was very stupid. It was.
Did you get this from... what was that movie?
No, this was before American Pie. Or whatever that movie was. It was a bad idea. I split the apple in half, actually, which made me pretty proud. Okay.
There we go.
So, grapefruiting. When a female uses grapefruit to jack a male off while giving head, typically the male is blindfolded and or restrained. So, Lily was definitely the closest. But, I mean, as with a lot of things in Urban Dictionary, what?
I don't understand how this would work because, I mean, if you're already giving head to a guy, I mean, a grapefruit's pretty sizable.
Gosh, you know what? I've heard of this before. I think I saw a video of this before.
Okay, so the guy must be really long for this to work.
What if you don't use a grapefruit to jack a male off while giving head?
Oh, you're saying stick the whole grapefruit on a shaft and then his head pops out the other side.
Yeah.
And so your mouth
is on the
only,
top.
Only. Like just on the tip of your
tongue. But how does it really work? Because blindfolded, grapefruit's restrained. Pretty big.
All right, well, it's time we shut this podcast down before somebody else shuts it down for us. So.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Jenny.
Likewise. Thank you for having me
thanks
on.
Thanks for coming on. It's been a blast.
Thank you for listening to the Trisexuals podcast. Remember to rate us on iTunes, tell your friends about the podcast, join us on Twitter, Instagram, and Telegram. Be sure to reach out if you're a model and would like to do a pinup / shout out for the show. Links and other information is in the show notes. I'm Max Chameleon, the king of tossing fruit salad.
And I'm Lily Chameleon, the queen of citrus galangas. All right, thanks guys.